Cato Beldrenga. The battle for the title of North American champion draws nearer, and the spoils continue to emerge through the mist. Barefoot Athletics returns for the third year as a sponsor of the 2023 WKSF Open North American Championship. There will be 6 gift cards of $100 added to the hoard. Register today for your chance to stake your claim. Registration is available now for only $100, with raffle prizes for all competitors and the opportunity to win cash prizes for the top performers. We'll be back at the Athlete Lab in Little Canada, Minnesota on Saturday, October 14th, and accepting video submissions for online competitors. Go to TwinCitiesKettlebellClub.com to register today. Come, answer the call of battle. Join us and fight for your clan. Fight for yourself. Claim your spoils and your glory. Sign up now, and may your name forever ring out in the Hall of Champions. Sign up today at TwinCitiesKettlebellClub.com. Welcome to the Platform Podcast, where we talk to coaches, athletes, experts, and real people to learn about their approaches to training, nutrition, mindset, and much more. I'm your host, Jordan Cundy Wright, founder and head coach of the Twin Cities Kettlebell Club, and our mission is to become our best selves through sport. This episode is presented by our friends at Barefoot Athletic. They're back for the third year as a sponsor of the 2023 WKSF Open North American Championship. It also so happens that our guest today, Jen Casey, won a gift card in last year's raffle and got herself a pair of the Ursus shoes. She said, and I quote, "These shoes have been a game changer for my kettlebell sport training. Lots of flexibility and enough room in the toe box even to wear my correct toes spacers. Plus, the soles have great traction. Highly recommended." So if you want your chance to win a pair of awesome minimalist training shoes, register today for the WKSF Open North American Championship on October 14th. It is also an AKLU qualifier event for Team USA, so you can come compete for the 2023 North American Championship and qualify to compete internationally in Poland, representing your country in the 2024 WKSF World Championships. As I just alluded to, my guest on today's episode is Jen Casey. She is the president and co-founder of Georgia Kettlebell Sport. She is a CrossFit and kettlebell coach at CrossFit Kennesaw, and she is also a CMS in biathlon as a lifter. Now, Jen is a good friend of mine, and I've worked with her on the AKLU board prior to her rotating off last year, and she brings a wealth of knowledge. We dive into a number of topics, including perimenopause and some other interesting applications of her knowledge and experience as a coach in two sports and her experience lifting internationally. I really enjoyed the conversation. I left with my face hurting from smiling. It's always so fun to get to connect with people that I spend a lot of time talking to outside of the podcast and whose opinion I greatly respect. So I really hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I do. And of course, I'm incredibly grateful that you listen to this podcast. The best way you could support me is to go register for the WKSF Open North American Championship and maybe tell a friend or two. Just go to our website, TwinCitiesKettlebellClub.com, for details. If you haven't already, please be sure to leave a rating and review of the Platform Podcast in your app of choice. Click on the subscribe and notify button so that you are notified every time I release a new episode. And of course, support our sponsors who support my work. And last but not least, if you want help reaching your goals without wasting time, please fill out the coaching interest form linked in the show notes. I help athletes of all levels seeking to become their best selves using my integrated coaching approach. You can follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at Twin Cities Kettlebell Club, or email me at twincitieskettlebellclub@gmail.com. Now, without further ado, let's step onto the platform to talk to Jen Casey. All right, welcome in to this week's episode of the Platform Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Kundi-Wright, and I am joined today by a good friend of mine and special guest. Her name is Jen Casey. She is the co-founder and head coach at the Georgia Kettlebell Sport. Is it Foundation, Federation? What's a club?
Georgia Kettlebell Sport.
Georgia Kettlebell Sport. She's also at CrossFit Kennesaw. So she's a kettlebell coach. She is a CrossFit coach. She's self-described as a medium kettlebell sport athlete. I won't assign that value to her. But thank you so much for coming on, Jen. It's a pleasure to have you.
Well, I'm really happy to talk to you. This is fun.
So I always like to start with the origin story. How did you, I feel like, especially in America, very few people start in this sport, in kettlebell sport, on purpose. so how did you stumble into kettlebell, assuming that assumption is true? How did you stumble into kettlebell sport? What was your origin story? Go as far back as you want. How did you get into sports? How did you come up? How did you get into kettlebell sport? All that good stuff.
Sure. Stumble is a good word, I think, and probably common, like you say. So about 13 years ago, I found CrossFit. So my background is in CrossFit. I had three little kids and I was a stay-at-home homeschooling mom, and I wanted to just get moving, get back into shape. And I found my home gym, CrossFit Kennesaw, which is where I still am 13 years later. And did
awesome
that.
Facility, okay. By the way, I've been there. Oh. I brought some of my coworkers there. We did an intro to kettlebell sport kind of thing where I got to introduce a bunch of my like nerdy data science coworkers to like this crazy thing that it is that I do.
They were so fun, awesome. And I could tell they were like, wow, this is a new side of our coworker boss friend, Jordan, that, you know, they did great. It was fun. That was what, like a year and a half ago or something?
I don't know. It all blurs together. I feel like COVID has made everything blur together. You could be like, oh, that was 4.5 years ago. And I'd be like, okay.
Right. Okay.
it was 4 months ago. Okay, sure.
I think it was post-pandemic. I think it was, you know, 2020.
Yeah, it was Yeah, it was like a year and a half, two
so,
years
yeah.
ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Like so you've been here, you've seen it. This is my home gym. This is the place where I learned how to pick up a barbell. And it's the first place I ever touched a kettlebell. About 2 years into my CrossFit career, I got my CrossFit level one and immediately got my CrossFit Kids certifications, like back to back. So that was 11 years ago, and started our youth program, which I'm still running. And that's been an amazing project for me that we've had a lot of improvements and expansions on that near the last couple months that I'm excited about. And so after I did those, I was looking around for another CrossFit cert because I wanted to, you know, just get certified. I wanted to learn all the things, right? And the next thing that came up in the list was they had at the time, and I'm not even sure they still really have it, is a CrossFit kettlebell certification.
Yeah.
So I signed up for that. And pretty soon after that, we got a new coach, and he had come over from another gym across town, and he brought one of his personal training clients with him. And it turned out he was training her in kettlebell sport. And that client was my co-founder and business partner, Lisa Frank.
Right? Shout out to Lisa. Hey, Lisa.
Yeah. Yeah. She's awesome. So she's been doing this longer than me. She was, you know, so this new coach, he'd have her doing some really fancy stuff with the kettlebells over in the corner of the gym. Like she was lifting it over her head and it looked kind of like a dance. I remember thinking it looked like a dance. And I really hated kettlebells at the time. That was one of the reasons I decided to do the CrossFit kettlebell certification, because I thought, well, maybe if I knew more about it, I would like it more. And funnily enough, that actually helped.
That's a really good perspective, right? Exactly. Actually. That's like me being like, I hate running. Maybe I'll do a running certification, see if I like it more.
maybe.
That's awesome.
I just could, like, the two-handed swing. And, you know, at the time, we gave this up many years ago, but at the time it was still that overhead American
The American swing, yeah.
Our gym gave that up as a gym like 8, 9, 10 years ago. So we don't do that here anymore, even in our CrossFit classes. But yeah, so those two things kind of coincided at the same time. And I go to this certification, and the guy there had been to Russia and studied with a lot of the Russian sport guys. And he was the guy leading the CrossFit kettlebell certification. So we learned a little bit of hard style and a little bit of sport. It was really nice kind of way to sort of segue me into this world. And we had some really great conversations, and you know, he was just a great overall lifter, but he was CMS. I don't know. Maybe he might've been master of sport. I don't remember now. His name is Eddie Ramirez. He's out of South Florida. So I get back from that CrossFit kettlebell thing, and I go to the new coach, newish coach at our gym. And I was like, yeah, I think I might want to try this CrossFit, this kettlebell thing. And he's like, sure. So I sign up for private lessons with him. The second or third time I go in for a private lesson, he says, oh yeah, there's a competition in August. This was like May, June. He's like, you're going to do this competition in August. And I was like, wait, what? So, and at the time I didn't know this was 2013. So I'm actually coming up on my 10-year anniversary. And, so I go into this, I do 12 kilo, one arm long cycle, and, you know, had no idea what I was doing. Lisa competed as well. I think I got something like, I don't know, 121 or something reps, which I was like, I don't know, is that even good? You know, I had no, literally no idea what I was doing.
Just showed up and lifted until they told you to stop. And you're like, how did I do?
Pretty much. I'm like, I don't know. The guy, the judge, and I don't remember who judged, who was even there. You know, he gave me some, he was like, oh, your technique is good. This is cool. And Svetlana was there. She came to that event. Some big names, you know, past and present in kettlebell world were at this event. And I remember looking at her walking in, she's wearing a Team USA uniform. I'm like, ooh, that looks pretty fancy, you know? So that was it pretty much. I keep waiting for my kettlebell phase to pass over and it just hasn't. So we're going on a decade.
You've got the sickness now. You're in for life. I'm sorry. I know. It's terminal. I hate to be the one to tell you this, but it's terminal.
Well, people, you know, always say CrossFitters drink the Kool-Aid, and yeah, but this is a different, this is spiked Kool-Aid. I don't know what it is, but it's definitely so. Yeah. And really it helped me love the kettlebell, because what I like about CrossFit is lifting heavy things. I do not like running. I'll make myself do it. You know, but this way I get my cardio and I get to lift something at the same time. So it was really appealing to me. So my second event was at the Ice Chamber in 2014, early 2014.
Man. Pour one out for the Ice Chamber. I love that place.
Oh man. And that was, I'm so glad I got to do that, because of course, I mean, that was, again, who's who in the world of kettlebell sport. Like, and so I didn't know at that time I was lifting 16 one arm long cycle. And I had the flu. Oh my gosh. It was just the craziest competition for me personally. But I mean, so many people were there, and I didn't know it at the time. It was like a 5 platform event. And I was the last 16 kilo one arm long cycle person to go. So I was on like platform 1, and 2, 3, 4, 5 had like Lorna, Brittany, Val. I can't remember, but it was like 4 absolute powerhouses, right?
Yeah, the best of the women's lifters, right? That was what the Ice Chamber was famous for.
Exactly. And I, like, again, no idea. I was just over there trying not to die, and I was actually sick, you know. And so like later on I saw a clip of this event, and they had that whole flight, only I was cut off. You could just see my elbow, because it was the 4 like amazing people, and I was like in the corner. But I mean, and so there, it just kind of snowballed. And we had at the time another guy here in Georgia who was running the events. His name is Scott Shetler. He was also a coach. He's very well known in the powerlifting vegan world. And so, you know, I did my first couple events here in Georgia were through him. And then he was kind of wanting to focus on other things. And with his blessing, he's like, are you at all interested in hosting events? Because I'm, you know, he was, I think, getting a little, you know, working on other things. And so Lisa and I were like, sure. And that was 2015. We were going to host an event for a big league at the time. And that league kind of canceled on us at the last minute. And we were pretty, we didn't know what to do. We were a little upset. We thought we had, you know, we had people come into town. It was a whole thing. And then I don't really remember which one of us said, you know what? We could do it anyway. So we did. And so that was the time we accidentally had our own competition. And that was November of 2015.
That was the real slippery slope that you're like, well, maybe just this one time we'll host a competition, because we don't want to disappoint all of these people.
We didn't want to disappoint the people. You know, some people ended up not coming because the big league had pulled out or whatever, but we had like, I think 7 of us, wasn't you know, huge. We did it right here in my home gym. And it was super fun. And that kind of helped me and Lisa. Honestly, it was a blessing in disguise because it helped us realize, oh, we don't necessarily need to wait around on someone else to tell us that we can run a competition. We can do it ourselves. So a few months later, we kind of made Georgia Kettlebell Sport formal and, you know, ran our first official event in 2016. And so we've done several dozen competitions, workshops, events by now. I haven't counted it up, but we do now, it's, you know, started before the pandemic and then, you know, like everybody, we limped through the pandemic's years, but we do two big events a year, one in June, one in December.
Jingle Bells.
And we host, yeah, Jingle Bells is in December and Bell Slingers is in June. And both of those are IKO events.
I don't want to dig on the June event, but for me personally, coming to Atlanta in December sounds much more appealing because I get to get out of the doldrums of winter, come somewhere warm.
100%.
And I don't have to come there during what I like to call the devil's armpit phase of Georgia's climate, which is basically basically April through November.
Now. Yeah. And totally fair. And also too, you've been at the gym I work at, CrossFit Kennesaw. It's not climate control, right? So it's pros and cons. So I train in non-climate control. Exactly. I'm doing my snatch sets in August in in all weather. We're all weather, right? But yeah, it does make, so we find a climate controlled event in a venue for the June event because it's just it would be too miserable otherwise. Yeah. But yeah, the time to come visit is the beginning of December. And that's usually our bigger of the two events.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's kind of how Georgia Kettlebell Sport was born. And Lisa has been there, you know, every step of the way with me.
So Georgia Kettlebell Sport is, 8 years old now. And I'll give you a chance to plug. You guys are you a 501c3? Is Georgia Kettlebell Sport another 501c3?
No, we're an LLC.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you guys have been doing it. You guys have been doing it for a while. How many people do you have in the club now?
So we have it's hard to say. We don't really have an official club membership or anything, but I think if we just went with the usuals who lift with us, who train with me here at CrossFit Kennesaw in some way, shape or form, I want to say probably 12-ish, 15 maybe.
Nice.
So, you know.
And then you have, yeah. And then you have your other thing where you're sowing seeds for the future, right? Where you're really big into the CrossFit. You've got the CrossFit Kids program, and I also see you teaching teach kettlebell to youth as well, right? So tell me a little bit about that. Like, how did that become an interest for you? Obviously, I know you said mom of three, homeschooler, so you obviously have a passion for education, right? But I'm really curious, what was that journey like? Tell me about that journey where you decided to take on youth coaching as opposed to dealing with old curmudgeonly busted football players like me.
And it really was honestly something born out of wanting to do something in fitness world where I could also take my children. So when I got my certifications, my youngest, who's sitting in this room with me now, was 4 years old. So I had 4, 7, and 10-year-old kids. So I needed something that would be flexible. I could work around my hours, but also they could participate. And also bigger than that, bigger than the logistics, I grew up as an active child. I did gymnastics. I played softball very poorly. I did marching band in high school, which I count as a sport, by the way. But really, I was a very sedentary adult until I came to CrossFit. After I had my kids, I was like, oh my God, they're going to run me into the ground. I need to be in shape. And so, you know, that was my reason for being here. And what I wanted for my own children, as well as the kids that I work with, is I wanted to model movement, good movement, fitness habits, you know, taking care of yourself, all of those things for my own children. So that was really the big reason I started it. Nice. Because it's just important to me. I didn't really have that kind of thing growing up, and it's so important.
And how do you find it differs from, because you coach both adults and children, how does your approach differ when you're coaching children as opposed to aside from swearing less? I mean, that's my general filter. I just have to swear less, but how does it differ when you're coaching kids as opposed to adults?
Well, that is 100% true. I do have to remember not to use the bad words as much. So with my teenagers, I'll let them slide a little bit more. They get a little bit more of the real me. It really depends on the age group. So typically our classes for the youth are ages 7 to 12 and 12 to teenager, you know, 18. Those are big groups, right? So physically, emotionally, mentally, developmentally, they're very different. And I know, how old are your kids again?
My daughter just turned 9 this past weekend. So on Friday, she turned 9.
And my son is
7.
Okay. Yeah. So your kids are still, they would be in my junior varsity group age, right? And one of the best things about the CrossFit Kids certification, when I first took it 11 years ago, and the people who started it, they have evolved their brand into something called the Brand X Method. I don't know if you're familiar with them or not, but I recertified with them a couple summers ago. And their approach to all youth training is to really just build foundational skills. And they have a really great methodology for doing that. So I can't recommend them enough. I did their professional youth coaching certification 2 summers ago. It is fantastic. Because one of the things I noticed when I first started it, and I've also noticed as the program has grown, kids come to me at all ages with movement gaps, which means they have some physical literacy gaps in their ability to move their bodies, know where their bodies are in space. And, you know, I am not a scientist. I can't pretend to know all the reasons for that. I just see that as true.
Cutting gym classes from public school is probably a big part of that lack of proprioceptive ability.
Absolutely. So, you know, for an example, if a movement gap that not every kid has, but I do see fairly regularly is not knowing how to jump and land off of 2 feet, right? So that's a movement skill. You need to be able to jump and land with 2 feet.
Fully expect that every kid just, not inherently, right? But like, it seems like kid, like you see them do it enough that you're like, oh, kids just know how to, like, they know how to run, they know how to jump, they know how, like, and maybe that's just my own bias because I coach athletic kids. I coach my daughter softball, right? Like, you know, so like kids that have had some movement coaching, but like, when you say that there are kids that don't know how to jump and land off of 2 feet, that's honestly surprising to me to hear, like just from my lived experience. But when I think about it intellectually, I'm like, yeah, I could see that, right? Like kids that haven't had that development, I could see that being
and
a gap.
I think you're right, like recess or, you know, we kids don't play outside the way. I'm Gen X. I mean, my mom used to sometimes like lock the door and not let us in the house until it was dark. You know, it's a different, and different for my own children as well, so it's not meant as a criticism or anything at all, but our environment's different. Kids are not getting as much movement opportunities. And a lot of times too, kids will play sports or do activities when they're younger, but the research shows a lot of kids burn out and drop out of all fitness activities about the age 13 and after, right? Mm. Because it gets, you know, for various reasons, right? So, but even my athlete kids come in with some pretty big movement gaps, like not being able to hinge, for example, which of course is a foundational movement for any kettlebell. Right.
It's just a foundational human movement. It's one of the big six movement patterns, right? Like the ability to hinge at the hip and not at the back. Right,
right, exactly. So my approach to kids is very much in line with the Brand X. We actually, our program just became a Brand X training center last month, finally. Nice. So it's a pretty big deal. Thank you. And we've been working toward that for a while. And we're the first one in the state of Georgia and hopefully the first of many. Because again, they have a whole methodology, a whole pedagogy around establishing good movement patterns and kind of reinforcing those patterns as you progress and progress through, you know, your growth periods and then later on when they're much older, maybe progressing through loads and things like that. So all this is in the back of my mind when I teach a kid a kettlebell swing or a kettlebell deadlift is usually where we start. And it's really just, it's very individual. And both of my assistant coaches have done kettlebell sport a lot. So that's helpful too, because they know a lot of this kettlebell stuff. But really in the program, we want to keep movement fun. and safe, and we want them to be motivated. So I don't really train younger children in kettlebell sport before puberty, before adolescence. We, you know, at Bellslingers back in June, we had 4 or 5 young children in that 7 to 9 age group that your kids are in. You know, they have been through my classes. One goes to another gym. Her mom's a kettlebell coach too. So they had some basic lift, and they're lifting like 2 kilogram bells and 4 kilogram bells and stuff like that, just for fun.
Yeah.
Perfect form? No, but you know, they're just out there and they're just loving the energy and just showing off for their friends and family and stuff. But that's what they get just by being in my classes, where we practice the hinge, we practice deadlift, 2-handed swings, 1-arm swings, and usually clean and some kind of overhead, depending on the kids. So they all do 1-arm long cycle, switch as many times as you can. I don't care. You're 7 years old. Do what you need to do, yeah. Right? On the platform. So it's really just about getting some enthusiasm for movement, having fun, doing things like that. But until they're in middle school or late middle school, I think I don't really train, because the other thing I always have in the back of my mind is, you know, you got to make sure those movement gaps are filled in. And every single time a kid in adolescence has a growth spurt, they have to relearn proprioception. They don't know what's going on. Like, their arms are 8 feet long and they're tripping over stuff, and they can't get depth in squats anymore because their bones grow faster.
Their lever lengths are different. And
they're just wackadoodle. And like, that's no fault of their own. So those kids in my varsity class, my teenager class, even non-kettlebell movements, I tend to be very conservative with load, and we're just focusing on good form that's manageable, while we kind of work through and give their bodies time to catch up. Because what I don't want to do is load a kid and injure them just because we're for the sake of, you know, oh, can I lift this? Can I lift that? So, and sometimes that frustrates the teenagers, but really until they're about junior or senior in high school, we don't really progress load in a way that I think we do with adults, right? Because their bodies are changing too much. Their mental and emotional needs are also, developmental changes are happening as well mentally. And so, you know, again, though, trying to keep it fun, trying to keep it motivating, and finding that sweet spot where they feel challenged and it's super fun and different.
Yeah, that's just a tough polarity to manage, right? Because especially with a group of kids, because you'll have some kids that are like super competitive, like, I don't know, my children, because they come from me and my wife. So it's unsurprising that they're A, perfectionistic, and B, super competitive. But it's like, they're also, that perfectionism can lead to some bad tendencies, where it's like, if they're not successful right away, they get frustrated and then they don't want to do it, or they don't want to keep, and you're like, okay, how do I keep this fun so that they want to keep showing up, but then also make sure that I'm challenging them? Because if it's not hard enough, they're going to be like, well, this isn't any fun because it's too boring. Right. You know, I'm like,
and then it's not so heavy that we're going to break you. And then also teaching them too, oh, you came to class today and I can tell you're a half an inch taller. So now we sometimes have to step back the load a little bit, right? Yeah. Depends on, you know, their experience and all this stuff. And this is just general. This is not even specific to kettlebell sport, but that's how I look at all the classes. And it's easy to get caught up in, well, he's lifting that and she's lifting that. And, you know, learning how to manage your own. I tell them this, the little kids too, you do your CrossFit, she'll do her CrossFit, he'll do his CrossFit, or, you know, all that. That's what I like about kettlebell sport, because I can do my own kettlebell sport. It does not matter if I am ever a master of sport. I'm just going to keep working on my stuff.
So what about with adults? What is your philosophy when you transition to adults and to your regulars, right? You've got your bakers, your dirty dozen of regulars, right, that show up. What's your philosophy with your adult lifters?
So with them, it's about the same, right? Like, I always want to come back to foundational movements, making sure we've got that foundation and that base and that knowledge of like what's going on in your body and everything. And then, and I do this with the teenagers a little bit too. I try to, with all of my clients, CrossFit, Swing Fit, which is my kettlebell fitness class, and my kids and my sport clients and stuff. It's the coaching part is a two-way conversation. I look at it. So if I say, do this with 12 kilo bells, and I want to know how that felt. I want to know, are you worried about that weight? Did it feel too easy? Are you feeling shaky and overhead? Whatever is going on. And what I always want people to do is be able to make some good decisions on their own in case they don't have a coach or they don't have somebody here looking at them, right? And I want them to know what it feels like in your body to get a good lockout overhead, right? I want them to know what it feels like when you're hitting a clean and you're not, you know, smacking the crap out of your arm. Like, I want them to know that firsthand. So it's a conversation. And with the kids, one day they will leave me. So I want them to know what to do in a gym. Like, those kids, that group will, like, they're supposed to leave me, right? Whereas, you know, obviously hopefully our adults won't leave, you know, eventually, but so it's really just about setting you up for what are you doing now, but also, do I have some knowledge now about what I'm going to do in the future? And so with sport, you know, we do a lot of technique drills. And so Swing Fit is my fitness class, and we also do sport. So not every class, but most classes, there's a fitness track and a sport track. So if you want to do, and they're the workouts are similar, they last the same amount of time. But if you're feeling sporty today, you can do some time sets. And if you're just wanting to get in a good workout, your circuit will look a little different probably, right? But, you know, we're always trying to make sure that you're lifting something with good form. And so, you know, during the class, I'm going around saying, you know, try this, do that. But remember, you know, don't let the bell come too high in the clean. You know, so I'm giving them a lot of feedback. And like a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them do compete in our events, because I think a lot of the teenagers and adults that I work with just like to have a thing that challenges them. That's why I do it. If I don't have an event ahead of me that scares me a little, I don't go into my training with the appropriate intensity and respect.
Those external goals are it's really validating to have those, I will say, because it gets that intrinsic motivation. Like, there's the fear of embarrassment is a very powerful motivator. And when you know, say that you're traveling to Canada on Thursday to go lift on Saturday, like, suddenly you don't miss your workout that you didn't want to do yesterday, right? Like, I did my workout yesterday because I know I'm going to be stepping on a platform in a week, and I can't not train this, you know.
Like, I got to do something. And like, you know, and a lot of our clients who are never going to care about lifting internationally or necessarily lifting in a big event or traveling or anything, like, they like to do it a couple times a year, and it gives them, you know, it helps them raise their baseline for where they're working out in class and everything. Plus, I think kettlebells are really appealing to adults, some of our adult population, especially the 40 plus groups, because it sometimes seems less intimidating than bar. I like a barbell lift. I've been doing barbell lifts all weekend, so I got nothing against bars.
Kettlebell Drenga, the gods have smiled upon us. We have been honored by the American Kettlebell Lifters Union to host the WKSF North American Championships for the next 3 years. Honorable warriors of the steel will travel from far and wide to battle for the title of champion, and you can earn your place to represent the USA team at the WKSF World Championships. Registration is available now for only $100, with raffle prizes available for all competitors and the opportunity to win cash prizes for the top performers. We'll be back at the Athlete Lab in Little Canada, Minnesota on Saturday, October 14th, and accepting video submissions for online competitors. Go to TwinCitiesKettlebellClub.com to register today. Come, answer the call of battle, join us, and fight for your clan. Fight for yourself, claim your spoils, and your glory. Sign up now, and may your name forever ring out in the Hall of Champions. Sign up today at TwinCitiesKettlebellClub.com.
But you know, for some people, it's just it's a little bit of an intro to weightlifting, which is important for everybody at, you know, in you're all adults at all stages of your life doing some, you know, resistance training once or twice a week.
So after watching CrossFit Games, did you go try and do the handstand walk with the touchdown and then more handstand walk?
I don't handstand walk. Well, so let me tip this back. Sometimes I can go up to 6 steps in a handstand walk. Nice. But no,
I would make it all of 6 inches and then I would fall on my head. So
no, I like the handstand stuff. I don't do handstand push-ups or anything because I don't like that idea of falling on my neck. But but yeah, some of the CrossFit stuff. And I was a little, every year I shake my head at the CrossFit Games because they seem like they're scared of kettlebells. And
they busted out the alpaca again. And these assholes didn't learn anything from last time. Like their technique is still terrible. Like, come on. Like, come at me, bro. I'll coach you up. Like, I'll coach you up on some good long cycle technique. Like, give me an hour. I will get you. Alpaca won't crush you in the same way if you give me an hour. Like,
some technique would really, you know, yeah, absolutely. I will help you CrossFit folks know how to clean jerk. But and what they're doing is legit hard, right? Oh, like, I don't play in jerk screens, right?
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Oh my gosh. But then the Helen too is a CrossFit workout. It's running and two-handed swings and pull-ups. And so I thought for sure they'd make it kettlebell snatch, but they made it dumbbell snatch instead. So I was a little disappointed.
Yeah.
Like, again, free kettlebell snatch lessons. I am as a coach, I love working with brand new people, right? So I'm really good beginner intermediate coach, I think. They're my people. I want to teach you, get started. I tell our CrossFitters, our regular CrossFit population too, like, I want you to like kettlebells, obviously, because everybody knows I have a problem with the bells. but you know, like in our CrossFit classes.
I don't have a problem. I can quit anytime. Right. I don't have a problem. I'm fine.
I'm not even pretending I can quit. I definitely But like, you know, and our CrossFit gym is a little more kettlebelly than many CrossFit gyms. And I don't know if it's because of Lisa and me or just, you know, our atmosphere or whatever, but I'm just like, if
you
take
the
time
to
learn,
you're doing it right.
Right.
That's why.
If you take the time to learn this technique, just like we take the time to learn the barbell snatch and barbell clean and jerk techniques and squat techniques and stuff with the bar, it will transfer, you know, it is great. And, you know, I try to also help them see the benefits like grip endurance and grip strength. I'm also a very medium-ish CrossFitter, right? But one thing I can do is I can hang on to a bar a really long time. And that's from kettlebell, right?
Yeah.
You know, you want me on your farmer carry team.
Well, so. And I will say one of the underrated aspects of performance in a lot of sports, actually, that is not quantified as much as it probably should be, is both raw grip strength for maximal grip strength, but then grip endurance, right? So think about MMA and wrestling, right? Or jiu-jitsu, right? The ability to control your opponent with your hands is crazy, right? Like that is an crazy important strength to have, right? So like kettlebell, okay? When you think about hockey, the ability to be able to have power from your wrists and to be able to manage your stick well.
Right.
Grip strength.
Right? Absolutely.
Football, if you're going to block somebody, right? Like catch the football. Like there's so many things where like grip strength and grip endurance is one of those underrated aspects of sport performance, all sport, like just athletic performance that people do not think enough about. And like, I think it's actually fairly pretty. I got to check my research on this, but I think that grip strength and degradation of grip strength, the slower your rate of degradation of grip strength as you age, I think is a fairly good predictor of longevity, actually.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was going to say that grip strength itself is a pretty good predictor of positive outcomes in elderly populations. So 80 plus, you know, 70, 80 plus populations, if you can, and there could be lots of reasons for that. And of course, I do not pretend to know what they are, but that keeps coming back. And I even, you know, as somebody who, I love a deadlift, right? I love CrossFit. I still do CrossFit, right? But being able to hang on to the pull-up bar or hang on to your deadlift for a couple more reps, that's often the weak link, right? And so when I teach the kids in my program how to do a barbell deadlift, I do not allow them to drop the bar, even though we have Olympic bars and you can right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because, and I tell this to my adult clients as well, because when you drop a bar after every deadlift, you're depriving yourself of an opportunity for more time under load and to work that grip.
Yeah.
So hold on to that bar and double overhand, none of this mixed grip, you know? So I'm getting older, I'm 52 now. So, you know, I'm not like old, but I am the oldest coach and everything. I'm like definitely like the mom of the gym or whatever, but like I want to be able to hold on to stuff. So I am doing, if grip is my limiting factor, say in my deadlift, then so be it. The obstacle is the way. That is the thing I need to work on, right? Yeah. So I'm going minimal equipment and, as raw as possible, because, you know, at this stage in the game for me, it's more about what I'm doing now, but more about what's going to happen to me when I'm 90.
Yeah. And I think, I think as you're mentioning that too, this is a conversation I had with somebody else. We were talking. So I don't know if you know Greg Anderson, he's one of my lifters, but he's in his 60s. And he's a marathon guy now. Like he was kicking ass in 10 minute sets for a while, but then he was like, I think I'm going to try some of this half marathon and marathon stuff. And he's been dominating at that. And so, you know, he loves doing that. And, we were talking about his deadlift approach on for GPP on his off days, right? Because we're like, okay, how can we get grip stimulus that is non-sport specific, but still requires maximal grip strength. And like, so we were doing, you know, he's got stuff that he likes to do with finger extensors but deadlift is kind of one of his primary things. And he's like, and I don't rap he's like, everything I do is raw, because it's like, in my mind, if I can't hold 315 for more than a couple of reps, I have no business deadlifting 315. I certainly have no business putting on straps and deadlifting 375 or 400, because now I'm ignoring the weakest link in my chain and supplementing it with some kind of a crutch. And now the weakest link in my chain might be like a disc in my back, or it might be a muscle on my hamstrings, or, you know, like, and I was like, yeah, that's absolutely like, it's a governor. Like your grip can be the governor that keeps you from trying to pick up loads that maybe you have no business picking up. Right. Because if you don't have the grip strength to hold it, you probably don't want to be putting that tension on connective tissue, especially as you age, right? Especially as you get older. I feel like that is one of those things that is an important thing to understand, that our demands and where we want to focus and our risk profiles change as you enter different age categories, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like, you know, the connective tissue changes. And, you know, so one thing I talk about with my sport athletes who are in my sort of age group, because really I look at coaching and training for kettlebell sport as it's not always fun, right? But what you're doing is you're playing a game to get your body used to this stimulus and this load over some time domain. And the way you approach training is you want to get as much stimulus for the sport as possible while not getting tendonitis, right? And like, because it's so easy to overload the connective tissues compared to your muscles, right? So, and we've all had tendonitis, I'm sure, in some way, shape, or form. I've had elbow.
Oh, I have perfectly healthy joints. Oh. Just ask my surgeons.
Oh, yes, exactly. Right. So it's this.
None of them are from kettlebell sport, by the way. I just have to say that. I have never injured a joint doing kettlebell sport. It has always been from doing stupid things like smashing my dinosaur head into other dinosaur heads or taking unprotected falls like that, right? Like, it's never been from sport. So, not from kettlebell
sport. Never been from sport. Well, I have definitely gotten tendonized from sport. And like some of that was just me not knowing, you know, I think my original coach was great to get me started, but there were things he didn't know. And like, we've all learned, right? You know,
yeah, of course,
mistakes. Yeah. And I know a lot of things too, but yeah. So, you know, so, and with my kids, of course, my youth, I don't want them to get tendonized either. And they could, I tend to progress them conservatively because I am concerned about, you know, how these multiple reps over time, what that effect is going to be on their young bodies. But with older bodies like mine, it's about recovery time and connective tissue. That's honestly, like, how I think about it for me. And I got to recover from my sets, and I need to protect and give my tendons and ligaments a chance to catch up. And they're, it's going to take longer for me now than it would if I was 22. So I really have to respect that timeline. So I really appreciated the podcast you did recently about, you know, the mistakes and not being patient enough. And like, I think I am anticipating, we'll see if I'm right, that as I continue in to drink the Kool-Aid and be stuck on this sport into the rest of my 50s and early 60s, I think I'm going to have to learn how to be more patient because of the increased recovery demands that come with a middle-aged body, as well as the connective tissue stuff. Yeah. So I'm always thinking about that.
I had that in my brain as something I wanted to ask you about. And since you volunteered your age, I feel better bringing it up and not people not thinking that I'm being insensitive, but,
I know you well enough
to know you're not sensitive about it, but you know, my audience is like, oh, what a dick. He's asking her about perimenopause. Like what a jerk question. Right. But like,
this is totally fine with me. It's fine. Yeah.
Exactly. A disclaimer that Jen said this was okay to talk about. And I really want her perspective because menopause and perimenopause, especially perimenopause, like I feel like a lot of women are just like, oh, you can have babies and then suddenly you just can't. And it's like, no, it doesn't just happen overnight, right? Like there is this transitional phase called perimenopause, which has its own unique challenges to it because the hormonal profile is changing fairly rapidly, but you're not in full, like there's that transition phase. And I know you've done a lot of education recently and like that you're, yeah, obviously like you're trying to understand it just from your own personal experience, but also so that you can apply that knowledge to your clients as well. Right. But, tell me about some of the things that you've learned. Like, what are some of the interesting things that you've learned either in research or from your firsthand experience? Cause like, it's an area that I want to dig deeper into myself as well, because I feel like, you know, as I'm, you know, approaching that same age bracket, right? Like it's something I need to be aware of and learn how to coach athletes as they go through that phase as well.
Yeah, 100%. And I love that talking to men about this too, because you have a wife, you have a daughter, you know, you have other women in your life that you care about too, I'm sure. I really learned it as you're fertile and then you're not. People whispered it's the change, you know, and all this stuff. Really, I think my generation, Gen X, we're changing this conversation about menopause and perimenopause. And I've been learning a lot about it just because, again, I'm in perimenopause. I don't know what's going to happen. My mom, who passed away a few years ago, had a hysterectomy in her early 30s. So she did not have normal menopause. So I don't really know what that would have been like for her. And if she was around, she wouldn't know either. Right. And so, I can't recommend the work of Dr. Stacy Sims enough. She wrote a book called Next Level, and that is a great book for anybody who is interested in this topic. And she really goes through, you know, a lot of the physiological changes, and she's a scientist type. I definitely am not going to pretend to understand this at the level she
does. Doctors and their science.
I know, whatever. But really, like, so before this perimenopause, though, within a cycle, women's hormones changes. And there's a lot of research coming out now for women who are having a menstrual cycle. There are ways you can optimize your training, nutrition around your menstrual cycle. So that's really, really fascinating. And I've first learned about that at the very first Women in Kettlebell Sports Summit, which was like 6 years ago or something. I remember now in Chicago.
Oh my gosh. Was it that long ago? Holy crap. Okay.
I think it was. I know, it's so weird. Yeah. Time changes when you get older. But so I first
old
heard
kettlebell
about
coaches
that
reminiscing about time.
I know, back in the day. So that was like an eye opener, just learning about it there. And then, you know, and then as I've transitioned, my friends are, you know, we're all sort of at different stages of this transition process. And it is now, instead of the regular stuff that we learn to expect, you know, from the time we were 13 or however, and, you know, to now things are changing and it doesn't just sort of like dribble away in a predictable, you know, pattern. Everyone's different. All these symptoms and things that people experience are really unique and challenging, and they really affect people in ways that, you know, until I started experiencing some of the symptoms, mostly for me, it's sleep and stress management stuff so far. I don't have too many of the hot flashes or anything yet, but I'm not there yet, you know, fully. Yeah. So one of the big takeaways from the work of Dr. Stacey Sims, you know, that, you know, you can there, you can't do anything about this change, and that's okay. This is part of life for women. It's not a bad part of life. It's part of life, but there are things you can do externally to support your body as your estrogen or estradiol, technically, which is, that's the main form of estrogen that goes away as it dwindles. And as it goes away, progesterone drops, you're able to support your body and to do some of the things that those hormones did. So one of the things that women can do is lift heavy shit. That's one of the recommendations. And lifting heavy shit is defined as lifting whatever you want to lift in that 3 to 6 rep range, not 12 to 15
body of one rep max, right? Exactly. In a set range, right?
Yeah. 80, 85, 90%. Like, you want it to be challenging.
Yeah.
High intensity interval training is also another recommendation, and specifically sprint intervals. So 10, 15 seconds on, like really hard, because this is external stimuli is going to do some of the things for your body that your estrogen used to do and isn't doing.
Yeah. Type 2A muscle fiber stimulation, which goes away as part of that process, that because you're losing that hormonal support, that's what will degrade most quickly if you don't do this type of training, right? You're going to lose that explosive and powerful, and those are the things that predict fall resistance, bearing weight is going to help reduce the likelihood of osteopenia and osteoporosis, mm-hmm. right? Which are also side mm-hmm. effects of the perimenopause state, right? So like anything you can do to prevent breakage, prevent weakness, bone breakage, and help support those hormones that are diminishing, right? Is that a fair summary of that is
exactly it. So all that bone density stuff and, you know, there's a lot of nutrition advice as well. So it's really, really great stuff. And that's what I'm learning. So what I like about kettlebell sport is I realize I don't really have to change my approach to training for my sport that much. You know, most of us do a lot of intervals in our sport. Mm-hmm. Well, that's your high intensity interval training, sprint training.
1 minute on, 1 minute off. Thanks, coach.
I know, it's beautiful. I was like, oh, good. I was already going to do that anyway because I'm training for biathlon. I've actually been experimenting and I really like this a lot as a protocol. So I'm a back biathlon athlete primarily. So I'll do double jerk sets right now, 4 to 5, 10 to 15 seconds sprint EMOM, super like heavy for me, like 20 kilos ish. Right.
Yeah.
But you do that hard. That's plyometric work. There's some impact there. Sprint interval stuff.
I'm curious now, what are you doing the other 40 seconds? Are you setting them down or are you racking?
So sometimes I set them down. Sometimes I rack.
Okay. I've played with both protocols, and they're two different kinds of hell. Like one of them is like, if I put them down, then I can go heavier weights. Like then I can start lifting the pumpkins and the red devils for me. Right. Like I can 15 seconds with the red devils I can handle, but I have to put them down. If you told me I had to rack them for the other 40 seconds, I'm like, okay, I'm going to 20s now.
Right? Oh yeah. Like, for me, 20s is set them down. Right. And I've done 14s. Super fast hold, right? Yeah. 14s for me is like, but that's still terrible, right? Like,
oh yeah, neither of those are fun, just so we're clear. Like it's just a fun kind of suffering that we enjoy because we drank the spiked Kool-Aid and we enjoy the suffering.
Exactly. So it's really nice. So, I mean, and confirmation bias is a thing, right? So it feels good to have your biases confirmed, but you know, a lot of the recommendations, at least fitness wise, really fit in well with my personal fitness goals, which are aimed at sport for kettlebell sport, but also, you know, I lift heavy. I'm very interested in lifting heavy. I keep saying if I ever get over my kettlebell phase, I'll go into powerlifting. Mm. And you know, I just, those things fit well for me because they happen to be things I like to do. And a lot of women too, though, like I know this from, you know, my own friends and people in my worlds, women don't really know what to do at the gym sometimes. They don't know. And that's why I think kettlebells is a nice transition for many women, men too.
Yeah.
If they've never lifted, it's resistance training. It counts. I mostly lift kettlebells. And like in the last year, I have lifetime PR, my bench press, my overhead strict press, like all this stuff.
Nice. Good for you.
Oh, thank you. I know. I was like, oh, it's so hard to do at my age. But, you know, my strength is there. even though mostly I'm lifting, you know, 30, 70 pounds, say double 16s, you know, for the most part. Right. So it's really all beneficial. And I do think talking about this transition, I think it's good for more men to understand that the women that you might be coaching or working with are going through this as well, because it's really complicated to figure out, why am I not sleeping? Why do I feel like crap? Why I have these weird anxiety, you know, whatever it is you're having. And that affects your training and affects your mood. And yeah. Do I even want to come into the gym today? You know, like all that stuff. Well,
and just being to your point about needing to be more patient, right? Like one of the symptoms of perimenopause is less sleep. And if anybody's been paying attention to what I've been saying for the past couple of months, I keep saying every post I make, I'm saying go the F to sleep as part of my tags, yes. Because I'm like, if you're not getting enough sleep, you're not recovering as optimally as you could. But if you literally can't sleep because you're right, like, well, then that's going to, diminish your ability to recover from those sessions, which might mean you need to dial back your expectations. You might need to dial back your volume. You might need to dial back your intensity. Right. And like, those are important things for me as a coach. If I'm coaching someone that's perimenopausal, I need to understand that. Right. And maybe I might even need to be able to educate my athlete on why they can't sleep or why they're struggling in the gym or why they're like, I just looked at the yellows and it made me want to cry. And you're like, oh, okay. Right. Like, well, you know, that
exactly,
might, you know, like that might not have anything to do with you specifically. It might just be, you know, something that's going on right now.
What's going on in your life? Yeah. Absolutely. And like, you know, so this book Next Level by Dr. Stacey Sims, it really is full of useful things you can try. There's supplements that are helpful and food, and of course nutrition plays a lot into this, because estrogen, as it turns out, affects every system in our bodies.
And have we estrogen also too, have just for all you bros out there, like you have exactly. Estrogen too. Testosterone and estrogen need to be in the right proportion for both men and women. Sorry.
And that's the thing too. I was just going to say, we also have testosterone, obviously not as much as men, but that for men, testosterone decreases over with age. And so with women, so that is a little more linear and similar from what I understand to men, but that will also go away for us. And so again, some of the things that will offset the diminishment of testosterone are heavy lifting and powerful explosive movement. Like all these things are good for human bodies at really all stages of development, from my 7-year-old kids in the gym learning how to do a depth jump and jump off a box and land with good legs and not collapse in with, you know, knees and getting that impact and helping their bones grow, all the way through, you know, where I am now and 30 years away, right? So it's I look at like the way my approach to coaching, like the youth and sport, and my what I'm trying to do in my own like sport career is always with one eye toward the long-term future. So I'm trying to play the long game here.
Me too. I'm trying to age into master of sport. That's what I keep saying. I'm trying to age into it where I just move up and my numbers stay about the same and I just get older.
And they're like,
that's better than it was.
I did that. I aged into CMS and it was amazing. It was so fantastic. But you know,
I'm all about that slow rate of degradation. I might not be able to go much higher, but if I could just stay there.
I'm going to ride that wave as long as I can.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. And like, so, you know, I have a grandmother who's still alive. She's 102 years old.
Oh, nice.
Right. And so again, I look at her and her example and what she's done of her life and the things that she's done to keep healthy. And it's very inspiring. So I always think, you know, what would my grandmother do?
Nice. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. That's a good filter for you. Cause you've got a good prime example to look at. That's fantastic.
Yeah. She's amazing. She's amazing.
That's awesome. Well, we didn't touch much on, we touched on Jen, the coach, quite a bit, but we didn't get to touch on Jen, lifter very, very much. So tell me a little bit, you know, we've only got about 10 more minutes and I want to be respectful of your time. So I want to know from your experience lifting, like you've lifted internationally, I know you said you're a medium level lifter, but like you've hit CMS, you've done fairly well in this sport, I would say, like from a third party perspective, like you're a fairly accomplished lifter. What do you think has been your biggest strength as a lifter? What's been your biggest challenges as a lifter as you've gone through your own journey as a lifter?
I think I'm naturally pretty strong, or maybe not naturally. I do strength a lot. Like I said before, I like strength. So I think my base level of strength is an advantage for me, which means that I hit my natural level of strength pretty early in my career and did just what you were saying in the podcast the other day. Went too, too much too soon, all those typical mistakes. Mm-hmm. And I also think I said, I hate cardio. So that's my weakness for sure. But I also have, I trained with Ken Blackford for many years and I have magic lockout is what he says. So yeah, I have like
you
these
do,
elbows.
You do. I low key hate your elbows because you have, I've got an elbow that won't fully extend. Thanks football. It just won't fully ever lock out again.
Right.
Right. But, yeah, but you have, every time I see your pictures overhead, I'm like, oh, what a bitch. I hate her so much.
I hate
your stupid elbows.
Ken called it magic elbows because somehow I think I can relax my triceps in the overhead rest position. Awesome. So for me, I can rest a little bit longer in the overhead than I think many people feel like they can. I don't really know. I only have my body, so I don't know. Yeah. But
I can't rest overhead, and I can tell you it's horrible because I also can't really rest in the rack position very well.
The rack position's rough.
You know, but you have short people problems with the rack position, right? Like I know that. So, but you have magic elbows to make up for.
But if I can get them up there, then I can take a nice breath. And I'm also one of those weirdos who likes jerk more than snatches.
I'm weird like that too.
Okay. I think it's you and Chris Gill. Is that
Chris Gile. Yeah. Chris Gile. Big cat. Big cat.
I think we're like the only people on the planet who prefer double jerk to snatch, but snatch is kind of my nemesis. But what I really like about the sport as an athlete is there's always something new to learn. I can always refine my technique. I find that process very intellectually interesting for myself as well as my athletes. And I like the ranking system, like the ranking tables and, like whichever ones you're using. I like knowing if I hit this number, I've got this rank.
It's very objective.
Now I know what my next goal is. Oh, and then I'll look at it. Maybe I'm sad and I don't want to do that goal. That's fine. Okay. Whatever. that is helpful to me. Right. And it helps me kind of, again, stay in my lane, I guess, and just kind of helps me keep plugging away. And I've gone to Korea and Latvia, and that was those experiences were absolutely amazing. I'm hoping to compete internationally again next year if I can swing it. It's just until I get rich off of kettlebell sport, it's just you got a budget.
hold your breath for that one.
Right, exactly. But those were amazing experiences. I got to meet wonderful people from all over the world who do this too. I was privileged to coach one of my older teens. She's 17. She went to Hungary this past summer. She did so great. She had just moved up to the 16 kilo. So we knew it was just going to be a just enjoy yourself kind of thing. But she came back so happy.
Set your baseline with that new weight and go have a nice experience.
Exactly. And she's so super motivated to do it again. So, I think I'm becoming more interested in pentathlon. I'm not, I don't love a half marathon or a marathon. I've done them, but the pentathlon I think is interesting to me as an athlete because I am strong and I think it would being strategic with some of those lifts.
Yeah. The clean, and press, right? Like
the clean where press.
It has to be a little bit more raw strength and
exactly.
And
like,
that overhead elbow position. Yeah.
Yeah. I can press 20 kilos. No problem. Like, I don't know if I could do it for a long time, but like objectively, like I'm pretty strong overhead. So I'm pentathlon curious, I guess. and really what I like about it is the best thing about going to Korea, that was my first one, was seeing these older athletes than like in their 70s and 80s. And they were all men because, as I think we all know, to start off as a male sport, some of the women aren't there yet. But what they were doing on the platform was unfucking believable, right? Pardon my French. And
bring it. This is not a family friendly podcast. Okay, we use all the four letter words here.
Oh, good. But I was like, yes. This is a sport I can do if I'm smart and if I still want to, right? My whole life until I'm my grandmother's age.
Yeah.
It was just so amazing to see. And I love the sport one of the things I like about CrossFit is there are equal opportunities for men and women in that sport. And kettlebell, it took a minute, but I think we're there now. We got equal opportunities for the most part for men and women, as well as some really solid opportunities for youth and masters. So well, youth, I think, needs a little more improvement maybe.
So I don't usually do this, but I'm going to ask you, I'm going to put you on the spot, and I'm going to say, I want you to come back on the podcast again for a second time, because I want to dig in on the CrossFit connection, as well as a little bit more on building the youth sport. So I'm going to ask you to come back.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to have you back to talk about how the connections between CrossFit and kettlebell sport. But I have two more questions for you. And the first one is one I've never asked anybody else. So this is a new one. And this just came to me. If you had to pick, and I won't give you circumstances about why, but just if you had to pick, you could only be a coach or you could only be a lifter for kettlebell sport for the rest of your life, which one would you choose and why? Had to pick your path. You're either a lifter or you're a coach for the rest of your life.
So I'm going to just assume I can still lift barbells. So I would.
I will say it's not because of an injury. It's not because I'm not giving you the your legs are taken away or anything. No, just like if you could only do one, you had limited bandwidth and you could only pick one or the other.
I think I would coach. I really do. I love it as a lifter, but I think I can physically, going back to the perimenopause stuff, I can get what I need with bars. If I had to, I absolutely love helping people learn how to use kettlebell. So I think that's where I would pick.
Okay. I can see that. I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
And then the last question, of course, is the usual one. So if you were working with a new lifter, what is one lesson that you want every new lifter to know going into the sport so that they don't either repeat mistakes that you made or mistakes you've seen other people made? Like what is the one piece of advice, if you had to give them one piece of advice as they're getting started, what would be your number one piece of advice to give a new lifter?
I do. Probably my lifters, if they hear this, they'll know what I mean. It's stay lighter, longer, stay lighter, longer. Stay always. Lighter, longer.
I love that.
You put, check your ego. And you want to pick up those heavy bells, and they're fun to do for a warm-up set, but stay lighter longer.
Build that base, baby. You got to build that foundation. The wider the base of the pyramid, the taller it can go. It's painful. It's not as fun. It doesn't reward your ego as much, but it's less painful than shoulder reconstruction or.
I can only imagine. I have not had that privilege, and I definitely don't want it.
Nobody wants that, but I love that. I love that. Well, Jen, thank you so much. We are up against our hour, so I want to make sure I give you your time. But I definitely want you to come back so we can talk about CrossFit and kettlebell. And
I would love to do that because I have so many opinions about it.
You have opinions? So, no,
I know. Just ask my kids.
I have a few myself. Yeah, apparently I needed to make my own podcast so that I could tell everyone how I feel about things. So.
That is a great idea. Yeah, love it.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Jen. I appreciate it. And I look forward to having you back for that conversation.
Sounds great.
We'll talk soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Platform Podcast. We'll be back with a new episode soon. Please be sure to leave a rating and review of the Platform Podcast in your app of choice. Support our work by supporting our affiliates. And of course, if you have questions or you want help reaching your goals, reach out to me. Till next time, thanks for listening.